is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox, which almost always is the case, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. This is not a happy show. This is our post-mortem show after the Cardinals were embarrassed in the first round of the playoffs, 34-11, by the LA Rams. Their season is over. They are done. They lose five of their last six games after their 7-0 start. And, oh my gosh, how hard was it for you to watch, Seth? Because for me, I didn't mind watching it. I've been disappointed before. I will say this. The fan in me can get over it. The writer in me made it very... In fact, I did not, after I finished the post-game recap, I mean, I wrote about Buddha being okay. And then I didn't write anything until Tuesday night. I just couldn't do it. And while I could survive this as a fan because I've been disappointed many times before, the analyst part in me was overtaken a little bit by the heart. Man, I just didn't have the heart in me to write about how bad it was or what went wrong and what's next. And so, yeah, sorry those of you who are waiting for content on CardsWire on Monday, because it just wasn't happening. And I'll be back, but I'm sorry, waiting for it on Tuesday. Monday was a game. So Wednesday, well, we know by the time you hear this show, content will be back up there, but I didn't have the heart for it. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, that's a terrible way to go out. It's a terrible way to end the season, and just to be, you know, losing's one thing, but to bring up or just to have to deal with the entire questions that this is going to bring is what, you know, it brings up the off season and it just makes it not fun. I mean, like you and I are 100% okay going into the off season after a loss and being like, hey, you know what? They're heading in the right direction. And, you know, you and I have said for the most part this season they are headed in the right direction, and I think we truly felt that way. Then, you know, last night happened, and while it still feels like they're headed in the right direction, there's a caveat of, you know, is this the regime to get it done? Is this the regime that can, you know, take this group to the next level? And that goes from GM to coach to defense coordinator, quarterback. I mean, there's questions about all of it, and that's what sucks more than anything.
Yep. And so this show, ultimately, what we're doing, what happened? Where can we throw the blame? Because at this point, the season's over. Time to blame things. Is the season a failure? Are we worried about Kyler Murray as our franchise quarterback moving forward? The question has come up by more than one person. It's all over social media. Do you fire Cliff Kingsbury? Do we fire Steve Keim? Can you extend him? And just how important is this offseason coming up? What are the stakes? We're not going to go into in-depth offseason stuff. We've got many shows left in the offseason for that, what they need. We need to mourn this loss and hash things out. So let's get started with that. What ultimately happened in this game? Because I think for me, it came down to this. They didn't start well. Offensively, they found no rhythm early, and the Rams took advantage. And ultimately, the Rams looked like the Rams we expected coming into this season. They, in that game, they looked like a championship team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is they missed some opportunities early, and they can't get out of their own way. And then this is a team that just doesn't handle adversity well or falling behind well. Like, there's no calming influence, unfortunately. I mean, you can go to the second play of the game, right? I mean, you've got a nice little screen set up for Darrell Daniels. It kind of fools everybody. Everybody goes, why is it going to Darrell Daniels? And for whatever reason, Darrell Daniels thought he ran a 4.3 instead of a 5.2 and tried to cut outside. And if he cuts inside, he gains 6 yards.
Up, yeah, he picks up. You stay on schedule, which was the whole thing about the Cardinals all season. They have to stay on schedule offensively.
Yeah, and then the second drive, you get, you know, you get a penalty, and then you get the, I don't know what you call it, lack of effort, miscommunication from Christian Kirk and Rondale Moore on the first kind of play Kyler made of the day, where you're like, oh, he's got it today. You know, obviously this was super early, but he, you know, he scrambles outside, throws the ball deep, and Kirk just kind of stops, and you're like, what are you doing? And so instead of a big, you know, 50-yard pass, you get another punt. And from there, the wheels just kind of came off.
Because then it was 14-0, and we know the Cardinals do come. They don't – I don't know if it's Cliff. Don't know if it's Kyler. Something about this team. They just don't – like, they handle adversity as a team overall when it comes to pregame during the week. They don't handle in-game adversity that well. At least they don't if they're not ahead.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, you just had a went from there, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and it was, you know, it was tough. It became, you know, more and more difficult for this group to come back. They were unable to find any rhythm offensively. They were unable to find any type of real, rhythm. And then at the end of the day, they just started to, they just started to struggle. And
they pressed.
Struggle. Yeah, they pressed, and they were unable to get out of their own way and really, you know, do anything. And from there, it just, you know, it became the reality of what everybody's biggest concern is with this team, is that they're a front-running team. And quite frankly, they are.
They are. Then it's okay. They're built that way.
Yeah, I mean, if things go sideways, they just don't. They don't do a good job of working it back. And so, you know, from that perspective, it was tough. But, I mean, there's not one thing you can point to that, like, hey, this is why they lost. There's a lot that you can point to and say, hey, this is why they lost. And I think that, at the end of the day, is the thing. And you know, you and I were talking a little bit about it off the air. I think bigger than anything else is the fact that this team is – just incredibly top heavy. I mean, at the end of the day, the losses they took from an injury standpoint just basically handicapped them and made it impossible is not the greatest word to use, but it made it, you know, nearly improbable for them to win.
And you know, I'm not one who likes to throw around blame on individual players, but you know, it doesn't look good when your head coach says, I expect him to have the best game of his life. And Kyler says he's built for this. You know, he's not. And then he looks scattered and nervous. Kyler had a bad game. And he played very poorly. His decisions weren't great. And here's the thing. That was mainly because he never got rhythm early. He is... like, he hits on a couple of throws, he get up first downs, he gets out. But you go through and out two straight, he starts pressing, and then you get the what the heck was he doing throw. That was, okay, I will admit, Matthew Stafford did almost the exact same thing against Tennessee. That was a Carson Wentz move. You know, the flip out of the end zone, he was trying to force something, and it would ended up being worse. You know, he instead of like the under over like the lob that he tried, if he had had the wherewithal to simply keep that sidearm motion and just try to throw it at Rondell's feet, it's an incompletion. But instead he tosses it up in the air and Rondell doesn't make a quick enough reaction to try and make a play on the ball, and David Long, you know, picks it up out of the air and has the shortest interception returned for a touchdown ever.
Ugh. Yeah, and I mean, just made it too easy, like you said, and just, you know, they just struggled. And this is a team that, you know, when they can't play from ahead, it's been an issue, and it's something we've talked about here. They're built to play from ahead, and you know, I didn't look at this, and that would probably be something I should have done. But you look at a lot of those, you know, like we talked about, like older Peyton Manning teams, right? And they had some of these similar, you know, stinkers in the playoffs. Now, I'm not comparing, you know, Peyton Manning, but, you know, they lost. In 2002, they lost 41-0 to the New York Jets. You know, they lost 20-3 in 2004. You know,
One of Peyton's big knocks was in the playoffs because they would play so well during the season, get the first round bye, and then get bumped in the divisional round. Seemed like almost yearly, and that was a narrative that followed him until he got the first championship, and then got the second championship when he was a shell of himself. But it wasn't until he got past that really the narrative disappeared.
Right, and you look at it, I mean, and again, we're not saying that he's going to be Peyton Manning, but you look at Peyton's first three playoff games, and he was 0-3. He completed less than 50% of his passes, and he had, I think it's just below 600 total yards passing, one touchdown and two interceptions in his first three postseasons. I mean, you know, and this was year two, year three, and year five, because he didn't make it year one and year four. So I'm not saying that Kyler's going to be Peyton Manning or, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm saying is that these things happen, man. I mean, these things happen. And to Jess's point, until you start winning, that narrative doesn't change. And that's the thing, as you look at it, you know, Peyton, his first three playoffs, he had one touchdown pass.
Oof.
His fourth playoff game, he had five and a near perfect rating against Denver, and they won 41-10. And by the way, he had eight touchdowns and no interceptions going into the NFC championship or the AFC championship game, and then lost to the New England Patriots and was sub 50% through one touchdown and four interceptions. So again, like, these games, these awful, awful games, these pathetic games, these bad performances happen. They happen, man. And I'm not making excuses. We are calling it like it is, but this doesn't, it's not.
It happens a lot.
Right. And it's not the book. It doesn't mean it's over for Kyler.
It feels wasted. We're going to talk about, like, it's not a season failure, I don't think. But then you see what Josh Allen did in the playoffs last year. You see what Joey Burrow did in his first playoff game this weekend, and you're like, ah. But the truth is, historically, young quarterbacks in their first playoff game struggle, even the great ones. Lamar Jackson didn't look good in his first playoff appearance. We've seen lots of young quarterbacks. John Elway struggled. Even after he'd had some playoff success, he struggled in his Super Bowls to start off. It's disappointing. And the truth of the matter is, Cardinals fans, we were expecting too much, and it was kind of like what happened with the Suns. Okay, once they treated us with a little good of little bit of like, hey, we're good, we wanted all of it, and it hurts. But let's not forget that where they were coming from. This was a team that hadn't been in the playoffs in 6 years. It had a roster of guys. You know, Cliff, like, let's be honest, Cliff hasn't coached in big games at any level. Like, yeah. He hasn't coached in any big major games. Kyler, he's had big game experience. Obviously, he took the Oklahoma to the playoff. They didn't win. Then you had guys with experience who had been to the Super Bowl before. We got like Zach Ertz and Jordan Hicks. That's not enough. And part of it is just you have to experience it. And obviously, you wish it would have been different. But you know the way this Cardinals team is built, if they don't get rhythm early, unless their defense plays lights out early, it's hard to overcome. Now, I will say this, after they gave up the first two touchdowns, they were bad defensively to start off. They also played well enough in the middle for the offense to get back in the game. The offense just never turned it around. And so I'm going to put the blame on Kyler and the offense, but also on the defense early on, because that they gave him, the offense failed and the defense put him in a hole.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, this is 100% one of those things where you can look at it and go, you know, Kyler didn't live up to his potential and who he can be, and they failed. And like you said, this comes down to the offense in this case. And you know, the defense didn't play well, but like you said, they gave them a chance to get back into it, and they just didn't.
Nope.
And if you don't get back into it, then that's what ends up happening. And, you know, at the end of the day, this team, it was good. I think everybody, or I shouldn't say everybody, you and I would agree with that. It was a very talented team, and we talked about that quite a bit. It was also a team that could not afford to lose anybody. They couldn't afford to lose a DeAndre Hopkins. They couldn't afford to lose a J.J. Watt. They couldn't afford to lose, you know, their key players because they were thin. And that's, I think, the biggest issue is that when you look at teams like, let's say, the Rams, for instance, right? You have Darrell Henderson, you draft Cam Akers, all right? Cam Akers goes down, or Darrell Henderson goes down, you pick up Sony Michel, and then Cam Akers gets hurt, so all of a sudden you're, you know, super thin at running back, right? So you got to go pick up Sony Michel, and you have Sony Michel, and then Cam Akers comes back, and you really just don't miss a beat. You know, you've got Cooper Kupp, and Van Jefferson's not bad, I mean, right? And you lose Robert Woods, and what do? Oh, well, let's go get OBJ. Like, that's what teams do, and this isn't a shot or anything, but like, you look at the Cardinals, they lost DeAndre Hopkins and they said, oh, we can survive it. And you and I thought for a time that maybe they could. But AJ Green's inconsistency and the fact that we've talked about it, when Christian Kirk is put into the role of being the one or two wide receiver on this team, he is just not a guy that produces
Consistently enough. He can be great, and he just doesn't do it consistently enough.
Right. And so, you know, you've just got so many issues from that case, and that's, you know, what this team ended up struggling with more than anything, is that they didn't have, you know, the horses at the end of the day to match up, right? And that, more than anything, And people don't want to talk about that, man. Like, people want to go, well, you know, look at them early in the season. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they showed it on the game. They were, I think, what, 9-1 with Hop, or 8-2, and averaging over 30 points a game. And without him, you know, you do the math, whatever. They're 3-5 the rest of the way, or 3-3, whatever it is, and then they can't, you know, I think they were scoring less than 24 points a game. So you're talking about a full touchdown difference. And I know you're saying, oh, well, you know, they didn't even do that, you know, in this game. They only scored 11. Well, yeah, and they also were trying to conserve James Conner because he was nursing a bad injury. They, you know, the offensive line progressively played worse as the season went along for some reason.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, this offense just couldn't. And trust me, you shouldn't be that reliant on one player. I'm not going to disagree with anybody on that. But this offense just couldn't get moving on track without DeAndre Hopkins.
Absolutely. And the last thing I blame is the Rams for being stupid good. This, the way they played. The Rams played on Monday the way pretty much, I'm going to say, including myself, everyone in the nation thought the Rams were going to be this year. They proved to be a kind of inconsistent team, but let's be honest. Most people entering this year felt that the Rams were going to buzzsaw their way through the NFC, have a crash course with Green Bay or Tampa Bay. And guess what? They won all those games down the stretch, won the division, steamrolled the Cardinals in round one. This is the Rams team is a loaded team. And, you know, the Cardinals just didn't do enough late in the season to overcome with their shortcomings the absolute depth that the Rams had that was healthy late in the year. So there's that. Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about what we think about the season as a whole. Was it a failure? Was it really? Or was it not? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We can say that what that happened was an epic collapse, an epic failure. Was that, we talked about this a little bit last week. Do you think the season was a failure, Seth?
I think the ending to the season was a failure, but I don't think the season itself was a failure. I mean, we set out, you know, on the season and said this is what they needed to do, and it ended up just, you know, not working out. And they, you know, they failed at the end of the season. I know, and I like the fact that the team says, oh, well, they, you know, they failed. But at the end of the day, this is a group that won 8 games last year after winning 5 games the year before, and they won 11 games. I mean, they've improved 3 games a year the last, you know, their 3 seasons. And yes, they're deeply flawed, and they have room to grow. But I mean, that's also kind of the point, right? Like, if this is the finished product, then that's where the failure is.
Yeah.
And I agree. The ending of the season was a failure because you can't go out there and play like that at the end of the season, especially in a playoff game.
Yeah. Monday was a failure. And I want the players to feel like that the season was a failure because the goal is to win a Super Bowl. But only one team does win a Super Bowl, and that's the stupid thing about that. And so if we as fans, okay, the fan side now, only accept a Super Bowl, then we will be miserable because, well, one, the Cardinals have never won one. Two, it's stupid hard to win a Super Bowl. You need to be really good and to be really lucky. Now, we're spoiled by seeing the likes of Tom Brady, who's been to 10 Super Bowls. That's never happening again, okay? I don't think, maybe Patrick Mahomes does it. I don't think he will. Tom Brady is a freak. His Patriots team, he himself is a freak. It's just ridiculous. In some ways, it's kind of, but no, and I said this last week. This season's not a failure. It's not a failure. The end, so the game, they failed at the game. The end of the game was a failure. Their season was not, but what their season was wasted. It's not a failure because no one realistically believed that this team was a Super Bowl team. I believed it had a Super Bowl ceiling, and we saw that ceiling early. Now, they raised our level of expectations only to bring it back down. They lowered it, making it so disappointing. But no, I do not say the season is a failure, because this is kind of what the trajectory was always going to be. They were going to be lucky to win a Super Bowl this year with the Bucs running back and the Rams loading their roster. They had to have everything go right. But it is a wasted year. It's a wasted year like 2014. And I said this on the show last week. It's a wasted year like 2014 where they started off so well and they lose Carson Palmer and they lose Drew Stanton and things just fall apart. So you have that good a start in a team that looks that special only to suffer losses that you can't overcome and end up, you know, whimpering in the playoffs. That's literally what happened in 2014. They go into the playoffs, they whimper, they have the record low yardage when they play the Panthers, and you know, their season ends that way. It's a wasted year because they had the cat, you know, the rookie deal, Kyler Murray. It was a wasted year. It's not a failure because this is slightly less than kind of what most people thought would have happened, but you now have delayed the success another year, which adds and mounts pressure to a team that is typically not handled pressure well.
It's been one of the big bugaboos of the franchise, right? Like, this is a team that doesn't handle adversity. And this is a franchise that, quite frankly, doesn't handle adversity. Hell, it sent their best coach in team history into retirement, right? Like, I know it was health issues. That's the going mark. But let's be honest. I mean, it was the fact that they saw the writing on the wall that, you know, Carson Palmer wasn't coming back. There was nothing in the pipeline. And, I mean, let's be fair, too. I mean, Arians, it's not like he went to Tampa and developed a quarterback. He went and just got the best quarterback of all time. Like, it's not what the Cardinals were trying to do with Cliff and Kyler is very difficult, and it hasn't worked. I shouldn't say that. It has worked to the extent of that they're a much better team, but it hasn't worked.
The payoff, they haven't gotten the payoff.
Right, and so that's what people are looking at. Like, well, and the problem is, I mean, you kind of hit on it, right? Like, you're in an era where you've got literally the greatest player of all time still winning Super Bowls, and then you have perhaps the greatest talent of all time in Patrick Mahomes, you know, doing things that nobody else has done. Just before this game, I was talking to some people about, you know, the quarterback situations in the NFL, and they're going, you know, man, I think I'd rather have Josh Allen than Kyler, or I'd rather have Joe Burrow than Kyler. I said, you know, if you take away Stephon Diggs in Buffalo, if you take away Ja'Marr Chase in Cleveland, are those guys that good? I mean, the only guys that have shown to be bulletproof, there's three. And not shockingly, the three Super Bowl favorites, right? Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady. Everybody else has these needs and dependencies that they have to have. And that's the thing, is like, maybe you say, oh, well, I'd rather have Justin Herbert than Kyler Murray. Okay. Like, I don't know if I blame you. Maybe Herbert's better. Maybe he's not. I mean, who knows? But I can tell you that the Cardinals weren't in a position to draft Herbert because he decided to go back to Oregon, right? So it wasn't even an option. They weren't in a position to draft Joe Burrow. They weren't in a position to draft Josh Allen. So you work with what you have, and what they have in Kyler is a guy that in three seasons has, again, improved each season. He's gotten to two Pro Bowls, and he's become, you know, a playmaker in the NFL. Now, that doesn't mean he's perfect or...
Well, and the players in the league, guess what? They believe in him.
Right, and they fear him. And that's the other thing that's interesting, is that there are teams scheme specifically for Kyler. Now, on the flip side, that means Kyler has to take the next step into, you know, what he can do to now, you know, rebut. That's the whole chess game of football, and what's going to make Kyler go from a guy that's puts up good stats and I don't mean to like disparage, but it's going to take him from being the, you know, Philip Rivers or, you know, the guy that just puts up the massive numbers every season, to a guy that you're talking about with that can win a Super Bowl every year. And that's going to be his ability to adjust now that teams are, I mean, we saw it in the game. They're basically begging him to play through the middle of the field now. They're spreading out their defensive line. They're slanting their defensive tackles out, and they're opening up the middle of the field. And he's got to learn. He has to learn to take that and move up in that and be able to use that, because what they're doing now is basically begging him to try to get outside, because that's what he's done so well, you know, in his career. And so in order to, you know, rebut that, he's got to adjust. And that'll be what, you know, what we find out about Kyler and where he's at and where he ranks among all the NFL, you know, quarterbacks. But for now, I think he's doing a nice job. I think he's growing correctly, and I'm excited to continue to be a part of that.
Let's build on that. So coming out of the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Ricardo Stock on the web, let's talk some more about Murray, because there's a lot there are people now who are starting to wonder if Murray's the guy. They're worried about him. Let's talk a little bit more about that coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Okay, this fan base, I know it happens in all fan bases, because he's not proven to be one. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not one of those guys. But now they're worried, what is Kyler the guy? And the question is fair only in this sense: is the big payday's coming. Now, they can extend him this offseason. I don't think that will happen. They will exercise his fifth year option. That's a no-brainer. And my guess is that his extension will come next offseason, I believe. That said, how worried are you about Murray as the quarterback moving forward? I am mildly concerned, but only mildly so. And that's for a couple of reasons. But you talked a little bit already, but elaborate on that. What's your level of concern for Murray in terms of being the franchise quarterback moving forward?
I don't have a huge concern yet, just because, he's a guy that loves to succeed, and whether or not he's the best team guy and all of that stuff. And I don't know. The guys love playing with him. I know that much. But he is a guy that hates to fail more than anything. And that drives him almost.
He gets upset and angry about it, which is why his body language looks bad, because he's unhappy. I don't know if that affects, some people call it pouting, but here's the thing. The second he makes a play, he's got the juice back. And so he grinds. He grinds when he's struggling.
Right. And so that's the thing, is like, I think his desire to be great trumps everything else. Now, you know, obviously that'll have to come with every, you know, other things, and he's got to grow as a player. Continue to grow as a player. But right now, that's the main thing, right? He is heading in the right direction. He's trending in the right direction. And now it's about taking that next step and becoming one of those, you know, elites. And he's got to be able to do that. And if he doesn't, that's what the concern is. I think the other concern is, you know, he's got to find a way to finish a season. And I think those things more than anything else are what are going to make or break his being a quote unquote franchise quarterback. But we've seen, man, like finding quarterbacks is not easy. And you think you have one, and then it's, you know, whether it's Tennessee or Tampa Bay, with
the Marcus Rams, Mariota, the Eagles.
Yeah, Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, the Eagles with Carson Wentz, the Rams with Jared Goff, you know, Cleveland's having to deal with it with Baker Mayfield, the Vikings with Kirk Cousins. Like, man, this is tough. It's a difficult thing.
The Dolphins are already with Tua.
Right. And so that's the thing, is like, it really just comes down to this, that he's got to take the next step. And from what we know, I think he's got it in him. He just got to find a way to take that next step, and we'll see what happens.
The concern I have is it's weird how his pocket presence has evolved, because his rookie year, he held on to the ball too long, but it wasn't holding on to the ball too long in the pocket. He was running into trouble. He got better about that last year. He looked great early this year, although there were some trends, is that he would sometimes run into, he would give his offensive linemen trouble because his deep drop, he would then not step up and allow the tackles to push the rusher off. And so he runs off to the side almost unnecessarily so, without, if he could step up and slide. The last two or three games, he's standing just in the pocket too long. Like it's like he's trying to stay there and not run out of the pocket to make plays, to stay on schedule, and almost to his detriment now. Like before, he wasn't bailing, but when something wasn't there fairly immediately, he would move to the outside to see if, to make something else happen. It was being very successful. Now he's not getting out of the pocket. He's holding the ball, and then getting sacked or then having to get the ball away to, you know, without making a good throw. And it's kind of interesting to see how that's happened. I would like to see him push the issue more with his legs. I know he wants it to be a luxury, but I think that's what makes him so special. You do it just enough, Russell Wilson style, Josh Allen style, is to, maybe not to the extent maybe necessarily the Josh Allen, but you've got to do that sometimes and be smarter about your pocket presence. When you go down to DeAndre Hopkins, like we've seen, he was just off on a few throws. It's obviously that this in this offense, you need big time receivers. You need playmaking receivers to make it work. But I have mild concerns. His mindset, I think, is the right mindset you want to see. I think he will learn that he needs to do some other things. Right now, the quote going around social media is when it talks about that he doesn't need to grind film. And that's not to say that he doesn't study film. He just doesn't do it to the extent that others do, because I believe what he believes and what we've seen from him early in his career, that with less film study, he sees things still. Like, it works for him. He might have to adjust that. He might have to adjust that and be like a lot of these other quarterbacks. Like, what do you know? Tom Brady grinds film. Carson Palmer, film. Like, they would grind. Kyler hasn't had to do that. He might have to. And so I'm not this is the most talented quarterback the Cardinals have literally ever had. Let's put this in perspective. The Cardinals have never had a more talented quarterback. He's not as accomplished as Kurt Warner. He's not as accomplished as as even Carson Palmer was by the time they got him. But when we're talking young quarterbacks, the Cardinals have literally never had as talented a quarterback. And the, no one in the league is like, no, there's no one in the league that doesn't, that, that doesn't believe in Kyler. They believe in him. The, it, the old, like, if there's any doubt about Kyler, it's not about Kyler. The doubts in this league about Kyler are about Cliff. Let's be honest. It's not about anything else other than his surroundings. Everyone believes in Kyler, and I think they believe if this situation were to fail, if he were to be in another situation or a different coach there, guess what? He will thrive. That is the belief throughout the league, that he is a star. He's already a star and will be a greater star in the years to come.
Correct. And that's, I mean, that's what they have to focus on and figure out at this point.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's get to that question. Do we need to fire anyone? Do we extend guys? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. The Rise Up Sea Red podcast is back. The best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It's crazy. The Cardinals have improved each of the last 3 years, and yet people, notable guys with voices here in the media, lesser guys as well, certainly fans, they're ready to let go of Cliff. We talked about this a little bit last week and in previous shows. I'm on the record, and I wrote it tonight, Tuesday night, and I posted it because it was kind of a point counterpoint. Chuck Harris, who's a contributor on Cards Wire with me, he said that they need a change. They need to make change now. They should. The Kyler Murray needs new leadership. They need a new coach, a new GM. I wrote the opposite. Like, as much as, like, it hurts right now. It hurts. It is. It stinks. It's the worst. It sucks to go through the cult, to see as a fan the sheer joy we went to utter embarrassment. It was embarrassing to be a Cardinals fan considering the start that they had. It's historically bad what the collapse that they had down the stretch. And they want to change things. But I want to say this. You can't fire Cliff. As much as you want to, it doesn't make any sense. What do you think? We talked about this. Is there a scenario that makes sense to fire Cliff Kingsbury this offseason?
I mean, the only scenario that makes sense is if you fire Kime and Cliff and you have a guy that you have a group that comes in with an idea that basically sells you better of what they want to do with Kyler. And so unless that is something that, you know, and that, by the way, how do you even know unless you fire everybody?
That's right? The thing. Like, this is different than when they fired Wisenhunt, who had the Super Bowl appearance, the two division championships, but then went through in 2010 and 2011 and 2012, where they experienced loss. They, each of those seasons, they had 6-game losing streaks. And in 2010, it was a disaster. In 2011, they bounced back and went to 8-8. In 2012, they started 4-0 and then absolutely collapsed. It was time to move on because it had gotten stagnant. This is a team that's improved. Yeah, they fell apart this year. But here's my point is this. You've seen the high. You've seen the high of coaching of Cliff Kingsbury's coach. You've seen it. And that means you know how good it can be. This isn't, you're not floundering at 500 all year. You were the number one seed for half the season and then for part of last season. And things fell apart. So you know what it can be. You also see what at the bad. So, like, you've seen the good and you've seen the bad. Here's the thing. Who's going to be better? Who's going to be a better head coach? Who are you going to hire who can say, I've taken a playoff level team and taken them to the Super Bowl or near Super Bowl? Or someone who says, okay, I've taken a 3-win team and taken them to the playoffs in 3 years, because we have a coach who has that resume now. I don't understand. I guess I kind of understand knee-jerk reaction, fire everyone. But here's the thing. You can't just fire Cliff Kingsbury and let Steve Keim make the next hire, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, you look at it and Keim, I mean, that Dan Bickley wrote an article basically, you know, stating they have to fire Cliff. And that, you know, Keim has given him two playoff worthy or something rosters. And then he goes on to say the biggest flaw is that Bidwell and Keim are buddies and that they need, they want a coach that's a yes man. Well, hello. I mean, if that's
so, why is he going to hire a guy who's not a yes man?
Right. So now you're just hiring the same guy. I mean, you're just hiring Cliff in a different form. You're hiring Steve Wilkes in a different form. Like, you can't keep just hiring different guys that are the same guy. I mean, and that's what it all works out to. Like, if you end up bringing in a, you know, let's say, you know, everybody wants to talk about Brian Daboll. You know, let's start there. That's the guy everybody wants. And you and I have talked about this privately. I've written about it. You've tweeted about it. Why do people think Brian Daboll is going to want to come here? Like, why would Daboll want to come to Arizona and play under Steve Keim or coach under Steve Keim? Well, they've got Kyler Murray. Okay, they have Kyler Murray, and I agree. That's a nice asset. But, you know, the New York Giants have New York. They also have, he's getting to be the head coach of a team with two top 10 picks. He's also getting to be the head coach of a team with a GM that he's worked with for the last however many years they've been in Buffalo together. Right? Like, all of those things are factors. You know, people want to say, well, you know, this isn't the 2019 Arizona Cardinals. I mean, you and I have had conversations, and it is what it is, but you and I have talked about this. If you put that 2019 Cardinals team on paper, right, and you say they've got a guy they just drafted 10th overall in the first round, and they have the first pick in the draft of a draft that's got a player at a premier position in Nick Bosa, who is, you know, turned out to be an all-pro, and you know, you've got these two guys, so you can have Josh Rosen and Nick Bosa and go forward and forge your way in the NFL. And they just straight up had people that had never been head coaches be like, no, we're good. Like, we don't even want to interview.
Eric Bieniemy said no. Mike McCarthy said no. He'd been a head coach before, but he didn't want it.
Right. And so, like, I just don't understand this idea of, like, well, you fire Keim or you fire Kingsbury because, I mean, you could go get Brian Daboll. Does Brian Daboll want to come here? Like, there's 9 positions open. So if you fire him, one, you're already 2 weeks behind. I don't think people get that, do they? They're already 2 weeks behind in the hiring process. And two, the history of this franchise has said that you will not get a top coaching candidate. I mean, we've gone through it before, but outside of Ken Whisenhunt, they've never gotten the big guy.
I think the biggest name, so Joe Bugle back in 1990, I think would have qualified as kind of the hot shot up and coming coach because of those Washington teams, the O-line. Right. I think that's the extent, because after that, you had a retread in Buddy Ryan. You had success with Denny Green. You had Vince Tobin. You had Dave McGinnis, who was the guy that they liked from the organization that they already had. They've done it all the different ways and kind of the same thing.
Well, and that's the baffling thing to me. I mean, we talk about Cliff and I don't like Kyler, you and I are, I mean, we are aware of their warts and we understand where their issues are and all of that. But let's also look at this. The reality is that Cliff Kingsbury has the second most wins in a single season in Cardinals franchise history. Like, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, that is a stone cold fact. Cliff Kingsbury's 11 wins are tied with four or five other coaches, but they're tied for the second most wins in Cardinals franchise history. Franchise, not just in Arizona. He's the only other coach to win 11 games other than Arians since they moved to Arizona. Like, this is a franchise that doesn't win 11 games in a season.
Right? Well, and the thing that baffles me the most is, so, they are a playoff team. What sort of standard are you setting? What side of standards? If you're going to fire a coach that has literally done what you want, the big picture, we're not looking at the micro and how things finished, but who has improved every year, has taken the team to the playoffs, was within a game of winning the division in the best division in the NFL, and you're going to fire him. Because what sort of chance, because if that's the standard, who's going to come in here and say, okay, they better win playoff games, or what are you going to do, fire him? Right. Otherwise, you're just doing the same thing. Like, I'll equate this kind of the Arizona State thing. Todd Graham, he did all right here. There were problems. He could have coached through it, that they fired him for Herm Edwards, who's been the exact same guy. And before Herm Edwards, before Todd Graham, Dennis Erickson, kind of the same thing. They go through this thing where they fire someone
to have the same result.
To have the same result. And here's the thing. Cliff, who are you going to bring in that's got the resume now? He did it. It's not how we wanted it to be look, but he's done it. And that's it. So ultimately, I think it'd be foolish. And here's the thing. I can't remember if we said this on it or not. Like, guess what? We already know they're not firing Cliff because he spoke with the media on Tuesday. He did the post-mortem after the loss. If they were going to fire him, they'd have fired him already. Like, he's been the one doing post, the end of season interviews, the exit interviews and things like that. So, yeah, it's not happening one. Now, interesting thing, as they enter and we were talking about, we talked about a few weeks ago, the need to extend their contracts. The finish to this season now changes my mind. Absolutely. You cannot extend him. You cannot extend Keim. You're going to have to go into 2022 with a lame duck status because now you really have to prove yourself. Is this a true trend? Can Keim put a better roster together? Can Cliff coach his way through adversity this year? So I don't extend either of these guys. And so it's going to be a little uncomfortable because Keim's going to be in the last year of his deal. And Cliff's on the last year of his deal, minus the team option. So, but it wouldn't be hard to
well, let go. And that's the thing too, if they get off to a 8-0 or 8-1 or 2 start, guess what? They'll pick up his extension. I mean, I honestly think that they would, because if you...
The devil you know is always better than the devil you don't.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, it's funny to say this, and it's also interesting. A Cardinals fan, on my site today said, winning 10 to 12 games a year is nice, but I would rather have one Super Bowl. Well, I think we all would. But just because you make a change doesn't mean you're winning a Super Bowl.
Right. And like, there's a lot worse things than being a playoff contender year after year.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, we talked about this, and it worked out, I want to say, 7 years later for Philadelphia, or 5 years later for Philadelphia. But like, remember Philly did that from Andy Reid, and it, you know, it took a while. Since the Chicago Bears moved on from Lovie Smith, how do you think they're feeling? What about the Carolina Panthers, right? Since
Jim Caldwell and the Lions.
Right. It's only been 2 years since they moved on from Ron Rivera. And don't you think that they'd prefer to have Ron Rivera back instead of Eric or
Matt Rhule?
Like it's just, it's crazy because you go through things and you say, well, this is what we got to do. Right. And so you go back, like I said, you go to Chicago, right? They fired Lovie Smith, and this is an apt comparison. They fired Lovie Smith after a 10-6 season. I don't think they made the playoffs. Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs. They went 10-6. They were third in scoring defense that year. You know, now 16th, and we know that Lovie was never an offensive guy. He was a defensive guy. It is what it is. They hired Mark Trestman. They went 8-8 and moved to second in points and 30th in points against. So, you know, you had that big improvement offensively and went the other way defensively. And then they went to 5-11. And then they brought in John Fox because, you know, now we got to get a guy. We had that success with Lovie. So let's get a Lovie Smith-like guy. We'll go get John Fox. He's the same guy as Lovie Smith, right? It's going to work out the same. And then you go 6-10. And then you go 5-11 or 3-13. Then you go 5-11. And then you're like, okay, well, now that's not working. We got to go get a different guy. And then you go get Matt Nagy. And everybody's like, Matt Nagy's the guy. 12-4 in his first year. And then 8-8. 8-8. And then 6-11 this year, I think it was, or whatever, and he gets fired. Like, you, unless you know what you're going to, unless you have the plan in place and you know where you're going, just making change for making change is how you end up in the cycle of being the Arizona Cardinals. That's how you are consistently the Arizona Cardinals. The thing that you have to do is establish a consistent winning tradition. And the teams that you can say that about that do that are teams with that ever, you know, consistency of coaching and a GM and everybody.
And you let them coach through some adversity.
Right.
You have to.
And so that's the thing is like, are you going to be the Dallas Cowboys now? We're like, oh well, you know, they didn't win the Super Bowl, so we got to move on. And it's like, well, dude, you're the Arizona Cardinals. You've been to one Super Bowl. Like, let's calm down on the win the Super Bowl thing, and like, let's just worry about putting together. Like I said, is Cliff the answer? I have no idea. But what I do,
but
know
you got to give him that. You got to give him next year.
But I also know in two of the three seasons he's been in playoff contention in the last week of the season. And he made the playoffs in one of those. By the way, the Cardinals have only made the playoffs 5 times in their franchise since moving to Arizona, in the franchise history since moving to Arizona. And you know, what was that? Two by Wiz.
Yeah, one by Tua, two by Wiz, two by Aaron. So this was number six.
Yeah, so this was number six. So let's not act like this making the playoffs thing is like, oh, well, you know, that's all he did was make playoffs. And like, this doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in this organization. And you can say, well, we want to shoot higher. We want to be better. I agree. You want to be better. But at some point, you have to establish a consistency before you just move on because you think you're too good. Like, oh, well, we should be better. I mean, should you? That's an honest question. Should you be better? Because I mean, I can tell you this much. From if you stack all the starting rosters together healthy, yeah, this team is a Super Bowl contender. If you stack the starters yesterday against the Rams, well, I can tell you that's what you saw happen. Are the Cardinals a 34-11 team? No. But you know what? They're probably a 34-20, 21. Like, they're... where they were yesterday is not good enough to compete with LA. And at the end of the day, from a talent standpoint, at the end of the day, that needs to be understood more than anything else.
Absolutely. Coming on to the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best era of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the offseason. We're not going to get into the, you know, what does this offseason mean? How critical is, how high are the stakes? That's kind of next in Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best era of Cardinals talk on the web, which leads us, since it's feels obvious at this point, that they're not firing Steve Keim or Cliff Kingsbury. That means this offseason is critical. That's the biggest question, right? The Cardinals, who have never been a team to, they've never been a team to kind of live up to high expectations. Let's go back to 2016. They were coming off that 13-3 year. They were talking about Super Bowl rings, not just Super Bowls, but Super Bowl rings, and they had the all or nothing. And they come out the gate, and they just never found their way. Special teams was awful. This is a team that when they've had expectations, they've crumbled. But this offseason is big, because if they're going to go with Keim, and they're going to run it back with Cliff and Keim and roll with Kyler Murray, this is the year they have to make things happen to look like a perennial contender, or then you almost have to go back to the drawing board, and you ultimately have wasted the entire rookie deal of Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, is this was the 2 year window, right? And now they're entering year two of that 2 year window. Let's all kind of put those two things together. And so, and realistically, we've seen via Patrick Mahomes' contract, and Kyler's not going to get Mahomes' money. Let's also put that out there. But via Patrick Mahomes' contract, what the team can do is they can whittle down that fifth year to make it a much more palatable as well. So you could be talking about, in ideally, two additional years where you're getting him at that $14 to $15 million base salary range, right? Before it kicks up into the 30 plus million range. And I think that's what's at stake here, is because you're entering that time where you have to make a decision on Kyler, on his extension. And quite frankly, while I think Kyler's a good NFL quarterback, and I think he can be a guy that leads you, the reality is coaches often make decisions based on availability, right? And so if you look at the Cardinals, is a coach going to want to come in and fix Kyler for whatever's ailing him or whatever needs to be fixed after next season? Or is a coach going to want to be able to pick his quarterback that he's going to, you know, quote unquote, put his rider, you know, his eggs in that basket? And that's a fair question. And so to your point, you know, it's very rare that an 11-6 roster comes open with a young quarterback on a rookie deal that's a two-time Pro Bowler and a rookie of the year. It's very unheard of. So the question becomes, is that something that would entertain, you know, coaches and things of that nature? And but two, what are the Cardinals willing to do in this last year of the deal? Like, how desperate would Steve Keim get in this last year? Like, we've talked, and quite frankly, how I don't think it would be a problem. I'm just going to say that. But what's Michael Bidwell's take going to be on pushing more money down the road and loading up for this year and next year? Like, if they come in and they sell hey, like, give us these 2 years, like, pick up our option. I don't know if Keim has an option, you know, who knows, and give us these two, don't make us lame ducks, like, pick up Kyler's option, just give us 2 years and lay out a plan. You know, is Bidwill willing to do that, and is he willing to know if it implodes or doesn't work that 2023 and 2024 are basically throwaway years now, right? Like, that's a bad place. So that's what this offseason is, man. Like, there's all these questions about what are they going to do and how are they going to put themselves in a position if they are on this quote-unquote lame duck, or if they can convince the franchise to see a two-year vision, you know, and how they're going to go about it. Because at this point, the talent infusion needed is obvious, and I don't think anybody would question that, right? Like, it's obvious that they need to address the offensive and defensive line. They got to figure out what they're going to do with Chandler Jones, and they need help in the secondary, especially, you know, mostly at cornerback. None of those things are cheap, and quite frankly, those have been the same areas of need for the last couple seasons, right? Like, so, like, Steve and Cliff, how are you guys going to address this, and how are you going to fix it? And those are the questions. And like you said, I mean, that's what makes it so big and the stakes so high, is because that's a lot to ask, right?
Like.
It's a lot to ask a franchise to give you the benefit of the doubt, and it's a lot to ask a team that, quite frankly, hasn't addressed those positions to address them all in one offseason to improve so that the masses are happy.
Right. It basically becomes, this might be, the most critical year that we've seen in forever, honestly, because of what it means. Because the Cardinals have not had a young franchise quarterback that they believed in since Jake Plummer. But Jake Plummer wasn't on his level. Let's be honest. He wasn't on that level. But yeah, it's just insane how big this offseason is. And that's kind of what has people worried, is the fact that this offseason comes with pressure. And then the season comes with pressure. And if there's one thing that we haven't seen from the Cardinals teams over the last few years, is their ability to handle pressure. And so I think that's where all the worry and the... just so if it's just going to be pressure and they're going to fail, we'll blow it up now. And I get that. But it's not how you want to run your franchise, especially after you ran off Steve Wilks after one season. Then you have the next coach come in and take you to the playoffs, and you run him out of town. It's bad precedent, honestly.
It is, and that's the thing, is like you said, unless something comes up, they're not firing, you know, Cliff at this point. But if you fire Cliff and say you hire Brian Daboll, I mean, say you get the top guy and they come in and go 6-10 or 7-9, like, how do you justify that then? And so that's the other thing, is like, if you fire Cliff, it's not like the new coach comes in without any pressure. I mean, you have to replace a playoff team. You have to, and you have to do better. And so, like, as soon as you don't make the playoffs or you finish fourth in the NFC West, then the question, well, why did we fire Cliff? Right? Like, it just seems like people don't think about all of the repercussions of one move. They just assume, like, well, if we fire Cliff, we'll automatically be better.
That's a weird thing to say about a coach, that they just don't believe in him. They don't believe him in at all. which is the strange thing. He's led the team to improvement every year. And you don't believe in him at all. They think he's a fraud. And that's a really weird thing, considering all the coaches that we've had who were frauds. Let's be honest.
Right, exactly. And, like, that's the thing is, again, you and I are not arguing that Cliff is going to win a Super Bowl. Like, that's not the argument. The argument is, like, where is this guarantee, and how do you decide that, the guy that you're replacing him with is the better option and is going to be the guy that, you know, takes you to the next level?
Yep. And so we're left with a critical offseason, and with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, episode 242, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. And with that, we will be back. We'll have to look at what we're doing. We'll probably go the next couple of weeks as we look at, we kind of break down the offseason, the needs that they've got. And then we will start hitting our off-season schedule, which is not quite as every week. So sadly, we come to the end of what is, we're talking about wins and losses, and now we have to move on to our off-season shows. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We should be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!